Mr. Macmillan, Reel 3. You worked for the railways for 2 years. Were you promoted, or did you move from cabin boy to signalman in that time?
No. You, cabin boy. If you wish, you could go from cabin boy to porter. But I didn't fancy walking up and down the platform, shutting carriage doors like what they used to do, and shouting this trainer's for, because there was no loudspeaker system. And a porter those days was a clerk, issued tickets, took tickets, seen the train was all right, kept the place clean. No, I was quite happy as a signal boy. Quite happy, uh-huh.
And what made you change after 2 years?
What, leave the railway?
Yeah.
I got a sudden urge to go to the Royal Navy.
And did that come about because you, this warship had put something into your mind?
That came into my mind, but I don't know. I don't actually... Whether it was... I've got a funny feeling, looking back now, it may have been to relieve pressure on the resources of the family, which I thought at the time, if I go away, that's one less they've got to feed and look after. I know it's the wrong attitude, but it just come into my mind, and I said to my dad, I says, I think I'll join up in the Royal Navy. And I just applied and went up to Glasgow and had my medical, and that was it.
What was your father's reply to that?
I think he more or less said, well, listen, you're making your bed, you've got to lie on it. Once you sign on, if it doesn't work out, there's nothing anyone can do about it. That was it.
And your mother, what was her feelings that you were leaving home?
Obviously, a bit upset. But as they come to see years later, it was a good thing because it broadened my outlook. And eventually they were quite proud that it had gone. You know, because coming home and leave in peacetime was... You sort of stuck out being a sailor. I don't know why, but... And they were quite proud in the end.
Uh-huh. How, or at least, what date was this when you went to actually join the Navy?
Now, the 13th of April, 1938. I was just looking up in my records for you coming, to be honest. The 13th of April, 1938, I went down to what they called the shore base there was HMS Wildfire. That was at Sheerness.
You'd gone to an enlistment centre?
I went to the centre in Glasgow.
And how? What was the system of actually joining the Navy?
The system then was obviously name and address, what schools you'd been, had you attained anything like that. That was all wrote down. And then you went from there, that was it. I think it was a chief petty officer or something, you know, done it. And then you went to see the medical officer. He examined you, tested all your body, your eyesight, and made sure you weren't flat-footed and all. You know, there was nothing wrong with you, you know. And from there, I just waited, and then I got not an order. Through the post to go catch a certain train from Glasgow, and I'd be met at Euston. Obviously they were coming from various, there'd be a regulating petty officer there to meet us all and take us from there down to Sheerness. There was a warrant in the thing, and we all met at Euston. No one knew anyone. We're all Scotch, English, Irish, Welsh, from all over. And then we went down to the Wildfire and were put in different classes. I was in 30 class down there.
But The Wildfire, was it a land-based ship, a train
yes,
ship?
Yes, it was land, like the Ganges and that, you know.
But when you arrived at the entrance to that ship, how did they receive you?
Well, when you arrived, you must understand it's a dockyard. It's a dockyard with dry docks, etc. Received.
You'd get off your truck or whatever it was.
They were a bit, I would think, a little bit overpowering. Because, you know, like everything else, if you get power over people, you rub it in at times. And when I come to think of it now, some of them were only able seamen. And you had to call them sir. Able seamen, you know, sir. That was my, and then, because when you went in, you went through the normal, they normally put you through another medical. You were in the showers. They weren't very, very hot, I can tell you. All your clothes were taken away, and then you went through and got your uniform and everything like that.
How was that issued to you? Did they actually measure you or just look at
no,
you?
No, they give you a rough thing. But a naval outfit in peacetime, you have no idea what it contained. Football boots, canvas shoes, overalls, boot polish, brushes, clothes brushes, all that thing. And it was a bit bewildering. And then they give you a stamp. They cut a stamp out, you know, like a... And you to stamp the back of your collar, but all your other equipment, you to put the string your own hammock and all that. All your other equipment, you to sew your name in. You know, with a sewing needle. Hammock was a bit of a... it was a bit getting used to a hammock, believe me. Quite a few people fell out. Once or twice I was on the verge of it myself. And then they put you in the class, showed you where the dining room was. You didn't have to do your own meals here, but you had to do all your washing up. There was a boy put in charge of each class.
And was that a boy from the intake or some...
From the intake.
Boy? Someone selected from the intake.
He actually... The boy that led my class come from Southampton. And he actually married my cousin in years. Because they started writing to each other.
Had they given you the bell-bottom trouser uniform that you and the?
You had everything, but not bell bottoms as in later years what you called your tiddly suit. You know, the real 30-inch bottoms on. These were regimental suits and that, and they only fit where they hit you, sort of thing. And then from then on, you started doing your. You were classed as a boy seaman. Then you started doing your routine.
Can we, before we come to that, look at the accommodation that you were put into? What was that like?
Well, you were each put. Each class had their own room.
And did your class have a name or a number?
No, number 30 was my. No, there was no huts. It was a big brick building. And you had, of course, where to sling your hammock. You had a locker. The food was exceptionally good.
Within the room itself that you're talking about, and you said there was one class in a room. Each class had its own room.
Each class had about 20 to 30 boys.
And you didn't like... And you didn't have beds, you slung hammocks.
All hammocks, yes. I never had a bed in my whole years in the Royal Navy.
And there is a system of doing this, of slinging these hammocks. presumably. A right and a wrong way.
If you didn't, if you put your hammock up wrong, the rope holding the end of your hammock obviously come away and you fell. But you soon learn how to do it properly, what kind of hitch to put in, that it wouldn't give way. You had a basic locker. There was no washing facilities in the room. The bathroom was on its own with showers. The laundry was on its own. And it was the first time in my life I'd ever seen a spin dryer. And it was a massive thing. It must have been 6 feet in diameter. And I think you could get the whole class's washing in. You had to be very careful with your collars in case the dye run from the blue into the white. That was, you never let that happen. I found that much out. They were very particular about your hygiene. In peacetime Navy, it was very, very particular. You visited the optician, the dentist, and as the dentist explained to you, any tooth that was bad, they were filled, because once you got to see, you couldn't very well say, I want to see the dentist, because you didn't, small ships didn't carry dentists. So that's why I think they looked after your health so well. In fact, they were very, very strict on hygiene. They used to examine parts that they wouldn't get examined these days only by a doctor, but these were examined by the petty officer who was in the showers. You got used to it, and you realised it was for your own benefit. But I must say they were very, very strict on hygiene. Very strict indeed.
And haircuts? Did you get an early haircut?
Yes. Oh, yes. That was, short, back, sides and top. There was no long hair.
Going back to the room you were now in, you say there's between, was it 16, 20 people? That you think
maybe 20 to 30. All depends on the size of your class.
And presumably, within the room, you had your places for hanging your hammocks, and you had your little cabinet to
yes.
put the things in. What else was in the room?
Nothing.
Any heating?
I can't honestly remember that. You had to do your hammocks in the morning, which was a certain way again, and you stored them all standing down, of course, because you had a stencil where you stenciled your hammock name on. Everything that you had to either stencil, sew, or what do they call them? You know, where you put
your stamp.
Yes. That was all done. There was a communal dining room, but each class had its own table. And your own nice forks and spoons, kettles, fannies and all that. You went and got your meal, you sat down. No, you didn't. The chap used to go and bring them in a tray, one of your, the cook of the day. Put it on the table and you passed. The plates were piled and he passed it down. You know, everyone passed to the one at the end. You had your own table. There'd be about 20 to 30 tables with the forms to sit on. The same table as you found when you went to sea, and roughly the same type of form. So you were really getting initiated from your early stages to what was going to happen in years to come.
And you say that one member of the table went and brought the food and dished it out.
Yes.
And did that member change?
Oh, yes, every day he changed. The cooks and the messes, the able seaman or the leading seaman in charge of your class, your next day he would say, you'll be cook of the mess, you'll do the washing up. You knew the day before what was happening the next day. We'll have gunnery lessons. If the weather, well, didn't matter about the weather, we'll have a day out in the whaler, you know, with the oars, which was damned hard work, I can tell you. And many of us there. Tomorrow we'll have Wo Gott der Macht.
We'll come to that. Mm-hmm. That's interesting, obviously. Can we just go back to the accommodation to finish that? You basically said there was nothing else in there. Wasn't a table in the room at all.
Oh, yes. I mean, now, there was a table and form so you could write letters, etc.
Now, keeping it clean, what happened there? Were you all responsible for your own area?
You were all responsible because you had those. Nowadays, they're electric, but those days you had big polishers and mops. You had to do, you know,
big bumpers, I think you're
real right. Hard work, you know. One went down with the big tin of process polish and rubbed it up, and the next one come along with the big buffer sort of thing, you know.
And was that done first thing on a morning before you?
That was done every morning. Every morning in life. And then at night time, you had to clean everything up again for captain's rounds. Like what you do and when you go to sea.
And how often was captain's rounds? Was that every day?
Every night.
And when you say captain, was it a captain that came?
Well, no, not necessarily a captain. It could have been what would probably, as they classed it as a ship, it would probably be the officer of the day. You know, even when you went to sea, the captain didn't always come round, which he would be otherwise engaged, you know. But you were brought to attention while he expected everything. And when I say inspected everything, I mean inspected everything. If anything was wrong, you had to pull the whole lot apart and start afresh.
Was this your kit inspection with all your kit laid out?
Oh, when kit inspection, it had to be laid out. Really laid out. There was a certain place for your blankets, your hat, your football boots. Everything had its own space. You got a sheet of paper telling you how to lay it out. Your cap on top of your blankets at the top, and oh, that was real strict, that.
And if that kit wasn't right, either clean or anything missing, what might happen?
Oh, somehow they accidentally cut the foot on it. And you had to start all afresh again. Oh,
they would just disturb your kit just to be.
Yes, just to make you do it again. Oh, I've seen people with kit immaculate, but somehow or other a petty officer would fall over it, and you'd just start afresh again. Oh yes, they kept.
Was there much stealing amongst you? Did you lose kit or disappear? Someone who may have lost or come round and take yours in place.
Well, you see, they couldn't take really your kit because your name was already on it. Either sewn in, even to the state of your brush for polishing your shoes. It was bang, you know, that your name was stamped into it. I think it was on the edge, if I remember rightly. No, I wouldn't say there was in every other walk of life, you had your thieves and that, but what was the sense? Because all they had to do was come round and turn your kit out and they would find someone else's name on it. You couldn't sell it because the name was there. Money? You didn't have much money. Your wage was only 4 shillings a week. And out of that 4 shillings, if I remember rightly, you had to send 2 shillings home. And the rest was for stamps when you wrote home. So you didn't have a great deal of money. Maybe one night out to the pictures. Or maybe go out with a couple and have a pint. You know, men. Which is only 6 months a pint. You know. But one pint was your whack sort of thing. No, there wasn't a great deal of. There was a bit of bickering and things like that. Oh, you're a Scotchman. You're a Geordie. Or you're a bloody Cockney. And them sort of thing. But in the main, if you didn't pull your weight, you were told. You know, you were on the same boat. If you didn't pull your weight, you were letting your mates down and that.
And within your group itself, within the room, was there any bullies amongst your people?
No. Not bullies and not like. I think the worst I ever found as regards anything like that. With the able seamen who were put in charge of you. You know how some people, if they get a little bit of authority, it runs away with them and they want everything. Some of them were, I wouldn't say bullies in that sense. I don't remember anyone ever being hit. If that's what it means, not bullying like what we have these days. Maybe too much, some of the ABs took on too much authority. But not the bullying, not hitting. There were certain punishments, of course, if you'd done anything wrong.
What might they be?
Well, I suppose it all depends on what you've done wrong. But it could be from stoppage of leave, which made no damn difference because you didn't go anywhere, to maybe not so much of the boys, but in later when you grew up, you may have had the 5 days or 10 days, which was on the parade ground with a rifle above your head, on your shoulders, and that was all the punishments I can remember. As you get on in years, of course, you were deprived of badges and lowered in a rank and things like that, but not for boys. It was rough, but I think they were pretty good to you. They treated you reasonably well, you know.
But they had responsibility because as boys, you were had to be looked after as if they were a parent in a way. They had a parental responsibility as well. I'm thinking in terms of saying that you didn't get into trouble, though.
Yes, looking back, I suppose there were people that joined up that had to have the father-like person overseeing them, or they would step out of line. Now, of course, then you had the other ones who were away from the parents, did step out of line, because for the first time in their life, they had a bit of freedom. But I wouldn't say there was a great deal of it.
Were there a good bunch, this first class that you were with?
There were. Yes. I was lucky in the whole of my service to be with real good people. Yes, I must admit that. I don't know where some of them went, because after about 2 or 3 months, I decided I would go into the signal branch. And that meant leaving the wildfire. Because there was no... You had Morse keys and that, for the lights and that, but you had to go to Chatham, up to the signal school, if you wished to be... join the signal branch. Or what they call then the communication ratings.
We'll come to that. Uh-huh. Can you take me through a typical day as a newly joined boy soldier? What time was reveille?
Reveille would be about 6:30.
And the first thing you did thereafter?
You lashed your hammock up, stored it, went down to the washroom, shaved, washed or showered, whichever you preferred. Come back with a towel round your waist. Change into whatever uniform was the uniform of the day.
And what might that be?
Could be overalls if you were painting. Your number threes, which was the normal sailor's uniform, with or without collar, whichever you were detailed for that day. Have breakfast, I think 7:30. To have been eight.
Were you marched to breakfast?
No, you went down to from changing into the dining room, which was also the gymnasium. You had your breakfast.
What would you get for breakfast?
Well, you didn't. I don't think we had a choice. I think we'd a cereal. Maybe bacon and egg with toast and a pot of tea. That would be... I mean, you could have as much tea as you wish because it was the big kettle at the end. That would finish about 8 o'clock. And then from 8 o'clock, you would probably be marched to divisions. That's when you were marched and you all got in your various divisions.
What was a division there?
A division would be your class. But your class would also belong to maybe the port division, the starboard, the forecastle or the quarter deck. And you would all be marched onto the parade ground. Was the church, did you have church? No, only on a Sunday, I think. You would have the officer of the day or the captain, whichever. He would walk round and inspect every division. And then you would march off. Your divisions, you had to be your number threes on with collars and lanyard. You would march off from there and go, if you had to change into overalls or whatever your other suit, whatever you wanted for the day, and then you would go, you may be going into a class to learn seamanship, you may be out in the whaler, you may be up the mast, you may be painting. It all depends what your routine for that day was. Stop for lunch.
Now, what time would that be?
12 o'clock.
Had you had a morning break between breakfast and lunch?
Not in the sense of going for tea or anything. You had maybe 10 minutes where you had a smoke or something like that.
Lunchtime arrived, and what did you have for lunch?
The normal good soup, good dinner, and a sweet. I must admit, the food was very good. And then, to the best of my memory, you had an hour after that off, where you could go to the canteen and buy a bar of chocolate, some cigarettes or something like that. And then, in the afternoon again, you started on other classes. Until
was this canteen a naffy?
Naffy.
It was the naffy.
Not big. The window wasn't as big as my front window there. And you queued up and got your tuppenny bar of chocolate, cigarettes, razor blades, whatever you required. And then I think you were allowed about an hour to relax, and then it was back. If you're out in the morning, you'd be in the classrooms in the afternoon to break the day up. That went on until about 4 o'clock. And I think you had a cup of tea and biscuits. And then the time was your own after that. Until evening meal, I think, was 6:30.
And what might you get there?
Oh, something light, you know. But between 4:30 and 6, if you wished, you could always go, and your instructor would always come and help you if you had any problems, like seamanship. If you had a problem, he would go into it with you. Or later on, when I went to the signal branch, you could go to the signal school and draw signal books out and still improve what you were doing, you know.